This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to a reading of the Braille Monitor, a monthly magazine published by the National Federation of the Blind. Material is selected with the interests of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. This program is funded in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. This is Lavender, and our program today will bring you articles from the June 2026 issue. Let's get started! From the Editor by Chris Danielson. As I write this note in preparation for finalizing the issue that is now in your hands, we are in the midst of a very busy May in which the focus is advocacy. It will be clear why that is as you read this issue. Doubtless you have also heard something about our recent advocacy efforts on either the live or recorded presidential releases, received calls to action via email, or even ran across mainstream news articles. As President Riccobono has said, the National Federation of the Blind is as critical now as it has been at any time in our history, perhaps even more so. Since there were a lot of fast-moving developments in late April and early May, the Braille Monitor may not be your first source of information on some topics, but we have included items in this issue that we hope make it the most in-depth coverage of some of those developments. We also note that you can get much of the latest information on advocacy efforts by visiting http://nfb.org/advocacy. There, you can read our latest policy statements, legislative priorities, and more. Two informative articles in this issue deal with the intersection of blindness and other disabilities. While the Federation is focused on barriers faced by the blind and deafblind, we must not forget that other disabilities can present barriers to our members' full participation in our movement if we are not intentional about learning and addressing their needs. Ilana Crew shares what she has learned about using a cane in conjunction with a wheelchair, and Kaylee Brendel reminds us that disabilities, even physical ones, are not always obvious but have real effects that require the care, consideration, and support of our Federation community. Ismail Collazo is the president of the National Federation of the Blind of South Dakota. He has been a chef, is now an entrepreneur, and has a family. In a beautifully written piece appropriate to the celebration of Father's Day this month, Izzy shares his journey and how blindness, training, and fatherhood have molded him into the advocate he is today. Our May articles, centering around the concept of independence, continue to generate discussion. Colleen Roth of Ohio called to share her thoughts on how independence redefines itself for many of us as not only our individual needs, but the needs of our families change. She said that as a blind parent of children with other disabilities, she found services like paratransit very helpful, even as she recognizes that blind people generally should learn about and can use public transportation. Now a grandmother, she uses a quad cane rather than a traditional white cane, and sometimes a wheelchair. She urges us to accept people where they are. In the same vein, Will Hendrick writes about an experience he had earlier in his Federation involvement that, without anyone intending it, did not make him feel valued or welcomed as he worked on building his Braille skills. While he recognizes the role of his own feelings about what happened, we believe that sharing his experience in these pages can help our community be a more inviting one. Finally, Camille Perez shared the following. Through leadership and community involvement, I have learned that independence is not isolation. It is empowerment supported by others who share the same goals. Ultimately, independence begins with mindset. It is something we claim by believing in our abilities and taking action. For me, independence means living with confidence, purpose, and the freedom to define my own life. Wow, I agree. The countdown to National Convention continues, so we're pleased to include an article from the chair of the National Federation of the Blind Employment Committee, sharing what they have planned for job seekers who will be attending, as well as the last 2026 convention bulletin before the big event. All of this and more awaits your perusal and hopefully your feedback as well. I look forward to receiving the latter at cdanielson@nfb.org or by phone at 410-659-9314 extension 2330. Your article submissions are welcome as well. You can review our recently developed submissions policy by visiting https://nfb.org/braille-monitor. There, you can also peruse our early access content and the online versions of our latest issues. Happy reading! Employment Events at the 2026 National Convention by Leah Stone. I was raised in a union household, and because of that, I've always understood myself first and foremost as a worker. I've been blind since age 11 and started working at 14. Aside from a brief stretch after back-to-back layoffs in 2022, I've spent my entire adult life employed as a blind person. Those experiences shaped my belief that work is dignity and that we as blind people have something to contribute in every corner of the workforce. That belief guides my work as chair of the National Federation of the Blind Employment Committee and fuels our efforts to lower the abysmal unemployment rate in our community. Throughout the year, the Employment Committee hosts programs to support blind job seekers and professionals, but nothing compares to what we offer at National Convention. Every summer, we bring together workshops, panels, and our signature career fair to help members prepare for and secure the jobs they want. I'm excited to share a preview of what we're planning for Austin. Our biggest event is the Career Fair, where we will connect employers from Texas and across the country with talented blind job seekers. Members often ask for more mid-career opportunities and a wider mix of industries, and we continue building those relationships year-round. Blindness agencies will, of course, be featured at the fair, not because we love repetition, but because improving rehabilitation services require blind professionals with a positive philosophy shaping those systems from within. Be sure to check the agenda when it's released for the new date and time. We'll also host our annual Seeking Success Seminar, the event formerly known as the Job Seekers Seminar, where speakers and panelists will dig into topics members consistently ask for, including entrepreneurship, the impact of AI on employment, and navigating career transitions. Stay tuned for the full seminar agenda. And this year, we're bringing back a classic, a program designed specifically for early career professionals. Some of you may remember the Upward Mobility seminars from years past. Well, they're back, revived by a new group of emerging leaders who are ready to help the next generation of blind professionals launch their careers with confidence. The Blind Professional Playbook will cover everything from self-advocacy and a first job to building strong professional networks, with time built in for connecting with other early career attendees. Our committee is working hard to make this year's employment programming the strongest yet. We always welcome ideas and feedback. All are welcome to share feedback at our committee meeting at convention, or you can email me at first.vp@nfb.org. I can't wait to see everyone in Austin. Until then, I'll How to Be a Blind Wheelchair User by Ilana Crew. From the editor, Ilana Crew has worn many hats in the National Federation of the Blind, including serving on our national staff in the Independence Market. She is currently secretary of the Central Maryland chapter while pursuing a degree in disability studies. When I first started experimenting with using a wheelchair almost 3 years ago, figuring out how to use my white cane at the same time was like searching for the proverbial needle in a haystack. I was a well-rounded cane traveler with hundreds of hours of blindfolded structured discovery training under my belt, so I figured that I could teach myself with a little research, but what I found was an information drought. I combed through online forums and internet search results, hunting for any scrap of information I could find, but I typically emerged from these research sessions largely empty-handed. The only blind people I could find making videos about it seemed not to use canes at all. An old APH document on the topic seemed to rely on a lot of traditional closed-minded assumptions. And though I successfully unearthed 2 articles by blind wheelchair users in the archives of our National Federation of the Blind publications, one by Maureen Pranghoffer and the other by the late Treva Olivero, neither went into the kind of detail I needed to teach myself from the ground up. They provided excellent pro tips that I still use, but what I truly needed was a complete beginner's guide, and I didn't have one of those. I had only 3 or 4 tiny pieces of a much larger puzzle. I put those puzzle pieces together to the best of my ability, but there was still much that I was left to figure out on my own. It felt like I was reinventing the wheel. Pun intended. Since then, however, quite a few more of those pieces have fallen into place. Over the course of around 6 months, I built myself a network of contacts from whom to learn. Some of them were my old blindness skills instructors, such as my former orientation and mobility O&M teacher, L.J. Bowens. Some of them were blind people I found online who did not have the same cane training I did, but had the wheelchair using experience, allowing me to ask them questions and then workshop my own solutions. And some of them were Federation members who had known blind wheelchair users. Eventually, I was also able to successfully make the case to my state VR agency that I needed a new round of adjustment to blindness training, this time at the Louisiana Center for the Blind, LCB. It was there that I made the most progress, working closely with Roland Allen as my travel instructor to stretch my skills and test the boundaries of what was possible. I spent 5 full months relearning how to cross streets, retraining the muscle memory of my cane arc so that I would quit smashing my rims into door frames, and practicing wheelies in the grass to get better at hopping over train tracks. I am still by no means an expert. I've only been using my wheelchair for around 3 years, only have direct first-hand experience with manual chairs, have never used a guide dog with or without my wheelchair, and cannot speak for every blind wheelchair user in every situation. I have collected quite a breadth of information, though, and I think it's high time that we take a fire hose to the information drought on this topic, so that others are not left in the same place that I was in the beginning. In this article, I plan to share the most fundamental things I believe you should know about using a white cane and a wheelchair at the same time, according to my research and experience. I have done my best to cover a wide range of factors and variables, although my aforementioned limitations should be fair warning that this guide cannot cover every situation. Hopefully, however, it will provide enough of a jumping-off point for you to experiment with solutions for your own needs and then perhaps spark further contributions to the Braille monitor by those who can share perspectives that I cannot. And so, with all that said, let's begin. Cane length. The first thing to know is that choosing the cane you use with a wheelchair will in many cases involve different considerations than choosing a cane for walking. To start, a wheelchair user will often require a cane that is longer than that of an ambulatory cane user. This is for two primary reasons. One, when seated in a wheelchair, or any chair for that matter, your feet are positioned farther forward than the feet of someone who is walking, particularly if your foot plate is at an angle that sits farther forward than 90 degrees. This means that you lose some of the length of your cane to your feet, which decreases the reaction time you will have when you encounter an obstacle, making it hard not to run into the obstacle with your foot plate. Your cane must be longer to account for your feet being farther forward than they would be if you were walking. Number 2. A wheelchair often takes longer to come to a complete stop compared to someone on foot because of its rolling momentum. When walking, it is fairly easy to simply halt one's entire body. But on wheels, you need time to fully stop rolling without braking so abruptly that you are thrown forward in your seat. This effect may be much less significant on many power chairs, depending on the configuration of the brakes, but power chair users may still experience this when moving quickly, necessitating a gentler stop that covers more ground. This means that you, again, need extra reaction time, which necessitates a longer cane than an ambulatory person. But exactly how much longer does your cane need to be? This depends on a wide variety of factors: how fast you tend to move in your chair, how high off the ground your seat is, how your disability may or may not affect your reaction speed, the angle of your foot plate, whether you're using a manual chair or a power chair, and how quickly you accelerate and decelerate on average. and the position in which you hold your cane relative to your body and chair. Because of all these variables, I believe that there is no set standard or universal rule that can be applied to all wheelchair users. However, when asked, I usually suggest taking whatever your typical recommended cane length would be when standing based on your height and go up two sizes as a starting point. If that's not enough reaction time, continue to experiment with taller and taller canes until you find the one that allows you to move, navigate, and stop at a comfortable pace. I am a firm believer that the cane should match the user, not the other way around. So if the cane you are using in your chair isn't giving you enough reaction time, in most cases, I believe a longer cane will be more beneficial than artificially slowing your pace to meet the limitations of your cane. I know I am not the only blind wheelchair user who has been unduly advised to slow down when I knew that I could keep myself perfectly safe with a longer cane. All that said, one thing to keep in mind is that by being seated, to some extent, your cane is automatically a little farther ahead of you than the same cane would be on foot because you are lower down in space, which changes the angle at which your cane tip meets the ground. This means that some people may be able to use the same cane in a wheelchair that they would when standing, especially if they tend to move relatively slowly in their chair and their seat is fairly low compared to other wheelchair users. But for many, this effect is not enough to compensate for the above factors. Hence my general recommendation of a longer cane for most wheelchair users. But do keep this caveat in mind because there are always exceptions. Cane type. Due to a variety of factors, the type of cane you choose to use with a wheelchair may also need to be considered differently than it would if you are ambulatory. For instance, a lightweight cane can be even more important for many wheelchair users, both because some of our disabilities also affect our hand strength and dexterity, and because we are often positioned lower down in space than someone who is standing, which can make the extra weight of a heavier cane feel even more pronounced. For similar reasons, using a cane that tapers to be skinnier at the bottom than it is at the top can also be extra important for a wheelchair user. That tapering changes the weight distribution of the cane to be more concentrated at the handle so that you do not feel the weight of much down by the tip. Even when I am using my ultra-lightweight NFB rigid cane, which is the lightest cane I've ever used, its weight is more noticeable to me when I am in my wheelchair than it is when I am ambulatory because of the different angle. For similar weight reasons, a rigid cane can also be more advantageous, just as it is when ambulatory. Many people are under the impression that a wheelchair user must always use a collapsible cane, but in most cases, rigid canes, when using a wheelchair, provide all the same benefits that they do when on foot, such as lighter weight and enhanced tactile feedback. They also feature all of the same drawbacks in terms of being slightly less convenient to store when not actively in motion. But holding a rigid cane while at rest in a wheelchair is not significantly different from doing the same while seated in an ordinary chair, in my experience. And so if a rigid cane provides you more functional benefit than a folding one, I say use it anyway and experiment with the most comfortable resting positions for your needs. I frequently wedge my cane shaft between one of my clothing guards and the side of my cushion, with the upper shaft resting against my backrest beside my push handle, or with the handle leaning against the wall behind me. It may also be possible to lean the cane against your shoulder with the tip held between your feet, clamp it between your knees, position it behind your foot plate, and lean it against your seat so the foot plate acts as a stopper. Lean it up against a nearby wall or corner, hold it between your shoulder and chin, or even stick the tip inside your shoe if the tip is small enough. For wheelchair users who may need frequent assistance being pushed, you may also experiment with the best position in which to hold it so that the upper half is not poking the person pushing your wheelchair in the face. Some strategies may also be utilized for clamping or strapping your cane to a spot on your frame, for which you can often draw ideas from wheelchair users who do the same for a physical support cane or crutches, with modifications for the height and diameter of white canes as needed. There are certainly exceptions to this. I have met a handful of blind wheelchair users for whom the nature of their disabilities sincerely require them to use a heavier cane. However, this so far appears to be the exception and not the norm, and some of those same people still experience hand pain or other difficulties from those heavier canes, but still choose them based on the overall pros and cons for their individual circumstances. And so, I would personally still suggest starting with something light and tapered, like the NFB Chris Park cane, the D cane, or the non-tapered Ambutec Slimline cane, and working up to other options as needed. The Revolution Graph The Revolution Graphite cane may be a good in-between weight for some users, while Ambutec canes are often the heaviest, at least until entering the heavy-duty market with options like the titanium all-terrain cane. Cane tips. Just as the weight of the cane itself can be more important for wheelchair users, so too can the weight of the tip you choose. As mentioned before, some of our disabilities can also affect our hand strength and dexterity, and so heavier tips can be even more detrimental for us than they can for ambulatory users. And just as our lower position in space can make the weight of the cane itself feel more pronounced, the same is true for our cane tips. In most cases, therefore, I suggest using small and lightweight tips, such as metal glide and ceramic tips. These tips provide excellent weight balancing, great aerodynamics, and superior tactile and auditory feedback compared to larger and heavier tips. They are also versatile enough to enable the use of a wide variety of techniques for different situations. Fixed tips can also be more advantageous than rolling tips for similar reasons. I've encountered a surprising number of people who believe that a wheelchair user must only use rolling tips. However, the user being on wheels does not automatically require their cane to be on wheels as well. Rolling tips are often much heavier than fixed tips, and for those of us with limited hand strength, the momentum created by a rolling tip can sometimes make it more difficult for us to wrench the cane back in the opposite direction after reaching the edge of the cane arc. I have noticed that this momentum issue for me personally can cause great hand pain, and so I find fixed tips much easier to control for my particular disability. Others with greater hand strength and hand control may not experience such difficulty when changing directions, but a rolling tip will still be significantly heavier, and that extra weight may feel more pronounced while seated in a wheelchair. And of course, the usual disadvantages of rolling tips still exist when using them in a wheelchair, such as reduced tactile feedback and limited opportunity for auditory feedback from tapping the cane. The auditory effect is especially pronounced because rolling tips are often made from plastic, which does not produce such a crisp sound when tapped and does not generate as much detail through touch compared to materials like metal or ceramic. One concern I have heard expressed not just by wheelchair users, but also blind people who haven't had much experience with metal and ceramic tips, is that these tips cannot be used with constant contact. Although some vendors like Ambutech may advertise metal glide tips in particular as being only designed for two-point touch technique, this is not true. And in fact, a good cane tip should be designed for numerous techniques, as the well-rounded cane traveler should ideally be making use of multiple techniques for different situations. The questions of when and where to use each cane technique are beyond the scope of this guide, but I can say with certainty that both a metal glide and a ceramic cane tip are versatile enough to be used with virtually any technique. So, for those wheelchair users whose disabilities make the dexterity involved in two-point touch extremely difficult, you need not worry that the tips I've suggested here will not be usable if you need to make more frequent use of the constant contact technique. Again, though there will be exceptions, just as the nature of some disabilities can sincerely necessitate a heavier cane, they can also sometimes necessitate a heavier tip. And some find the momentum of a rolling tip to be a help rather than a hindrance. Some disabilities can also impair a person's proprioception, the body's ability to perceive its position, movement, and spatial orientation without visual input, such that they struggle to detect large drop-offs, such as stairs and curbs, without a tip that is either large or heavy enough to make the sensation significantly more obvious. Still, others may use a small, lightweight tip for greater functionality, but use something like loose metal washers or tied-on bells to produce an obvious sound to alert them of such changes if they are not physically able to detect them reliably by touch. Given that falling off of a curb or step can be far more dangerous to someone in a wheelchair than it can be to most on foot, ensuring you have adequate drop-off detection for your disability is imperative. That said, these cases are often still the exception and not the norm in the experience I've had so far. And so I would still recommend starting with something small, lightweight, and with great feedback for most, and then experimenting with other options once lighter options have been thoroughly exhausted. No need to risk pain, tiredness, or repetitive stress injury from a heavy rolling tip if something small and lightweight will get the job done just as well. I will also discuss some technique options later on that may aid in better drop-off detection without requiring a specific tip type. Using the chair and cane at the same time. And now we move on to the real meat of the question. How do you use a white cane and a wheelchair at the same time? The first thing I will say is that there is not one single answer to this question. There are many types of wheelchairs and power attachments and many different individual needs. However, I will try to cover the main options available to you, and we will talk separately about power chairs and manual chairs. Power chairs. If you use a power chair, I have good news because your answer to this issue is much simpler than manual chair options for most. The majority of power chairs that I know of are operated fully one-handed, leaving your other hand free to use your cane as usual. This certainly gives many power chair users an advantage in learning to use their canes from their wheelchairs. So long as you have enough hand function in at least one hand to use a white cane and enough hand function in the other to operate your chair, you shouldn't have too many other factors to worry about. The primary consideration will likely be in which hand to use the cane and which to use the chair control, particularly if you do have issues with hand function and you may want to try a wide variety of joysticks and control methods for your chair to find what works best for your needs. If hand function or coordination is an issue such that using a cane in one hand and chair controls in the other is not possible, but one hand can still use the cane, you may want to look into alternative control methods for your chair that do not require the hand. I will admit to knowing extremely little about these alternatives, other than that some do exist, however, so this will be something you will want to research heavily on your own time to determine if they would work for you or not. There are certainly some who will simply not be able to use a cane and operate their chairs independently at the same time due to the nature of their disabilities and hand function in particular. But it may still be worth researching as many options for chair controls as possible if you have the ability to use a white cane. Note, if you use a power chair which allows you to adjust the height of your seat for easier access to tables or conversations, you may want to pick a consistent seat height at which you keep your chair when traveling, at least while you are still learning, and find an accessible way to return your seat to that same height. Inconsistent seat heights when using your cane could produce varying reaction time with your cane due to changing the angle at which your cane extends forward and thereby altering exactly how far ahead your cane tip is from one outing to another. Manual chairs. We manual wheelchair users often have to get a little more creative about how we operate our chairs and canes at the same time. The typical manual wheelchair requires the use of both hands on the push rims, which does not leave a free hand for the white cane. There are several options to try out, however, so the answer need not necessarily be to just use a power chair instead. The first option, requiring the least specific chair design and augmentation choices, is to hold both the cane handle and one push rim in the same hand, sweeping the cane between each push as you move. I confess that I have had significant trouble learning how to perform this technique. However, I have met several manual wheelchair users who do, one of whom was our very own late Treva Olivero, as she described in an article she wrote for the Future Reflections magazine entitled, From Tumbles to Triumphs, Using a Cane from a Wheelchair. You may need to experiment quite extensively with this technique to determine if it will work for you, trying different grip positions, arc movements, and potentially different push rim shapes and textures. Some may need to wrap the whole hand around both the cane handle and push rim. Some may split their fingers between cane and push rim like some crutch users do when carrying other objects, and some may only use the palm or heel of the hand to push the wheel and so have the cane wrapped with all of the fingers. Making this technique work can be very individualized and require plenty of trial and error. However, if you can achieve it, it will often allow you to have the greatest choice and flexibility in your chair features, since it does not require any special customizations to make it work. When using this technique, however, you may want to pay special attention to your cane arc to ensure that it is even, because this technique means that your arc will begin with the handle held off to the side instead of the center of your body. It can require more practice to ensure your arc does not fall too short on one side or the other. I have personally found myself prone to not sweeping far enough out on my right side when experimenting with this technique, leading to swiping my right push rim on things too frequently as I pass. If you find this technique effective for you, be sure to pay close attention to your cane arc as you practice it in order to build good habits. A second option is a one-arm drive system on your manual chair so that both wheels can be pushed with only one hand. These systems place both push rims on one side. The standard push rim that controls the wheel on that side and a second smaller push rim that controls the opposite wheel via a removable axle. To move forward or backward, the user grips both push rims at once, and to turn, you only operate one push rim. One-arm drive systems are used most often for those with one-sided upper limb differences or significantly reduced hand and arm function on one side, but they can be repurposed for those of us who need a hand free for our second mobility aid. The largest potential downside to this feature is that it can be more challenging to push yourself long distances or up hills with only the power of one arm. It can also make the chair slightly heavier overall and require some dexterity, so it may be best for those with reasonably good hand function and upper body strength, or may need to be augmented with a power assist attachment. It can also lead to your chair arm building up a bit more strength from pushing compared to your cane hand, but so long as you do not mind some slight asymmetry of your arms to those who look closely enough, a one-arm drive system can offer great freedom to use your cane normally in the other. It also leaves your cane hand free to hold the cane in the center of your body if you are able, rather than off to the side, avoiding the more complex cane arc work involved in the first option we discussed. This customization can be quite pricey, however, and so you will want to ensure that you have a wheelchair occupational therapist, OT, who is very good at writing medical justifications for your desired features. A third option, assuming you have the leg function, is foot propelling. This is how I have personally chosen to use my manual wheelchair most of the time, because my disability allows me to do so. This option will certainly not be possible for many whose disabilities prevent it, but if you are physically able, foot propelling can be a great option that leaves both of your hands free, allowing even more flexibility than most power chair users. I am often seen on my college campus rolling along with my cane, moving in one hand and a Starbucks cup in the other. It also allows me to keep my cane centered in front of my body, avoiding the more complex cane arc practice required of the first technique, and having my feet on the ground allows me to get a little extra feedback about the surface as I would when walking. Having my non-cane hand free also means that I can use that hand for extra leverage on small slopes or when turning, or even just for a little extra momentum on occasion. However, for larger slopes, foot propelling can be quite difficult on its own, and so you may find yourself needing to use both hands for a push or two with a sweep of the cane in between, or opting for a power assist attachment as I have. The major downside to foot propelling, however, is limiting your options for rigid frame wheelchairs, as the fixed foot plate will inevitably get in your way. However, some manufacturers, such as T-Lite and Sunrise Medical, offer rigid chair models and customizations that include split flip-up or fully removable footrests, so it can still be possible to have both if you can get insurance to pay the extra price for it. I plan on going for this in my next chair. Do also note that if you plan to use foot propelling as a primary technique, your seat height will need to be much lower to ensure you have good traction. You may also be able to make use of some combination of both foot propelling and pushing with one hand if you are able to do so, but neither one is good enough on its own. Having the strength of both feet and one arm may be a great combination for some people, depending on your disability, or even one arm and one leg if one of your legs is capable of foot propelling but the other is not. You may even be able to combine foot propelling with a one-arm drive system to make this method more effective. I do not have a one-arm drive system on my current chair, but just having one hand on my left wheel can give me a little extra speed or power from time to time. If you do this without a one-arm drive system, however, be aware that putting only one hand on one wheel like this may sometimes cause you to turn or veer slightly in the opposite direction. I have found that my feet, doing most of the directing, largely sidesteps this issue, but be sure to pay attention to your trajectory when doing this to stay on track. If manual propulsion on its own will not meet your needs well enough, you may also consider a power assist attachment. This is a motorized device that attaches to a manual wheelchair in different ways to enable the user to have some power at their disposal while not losing the overall lightness and maneuverability of a manual wheelchair. Power assists come in three primary configurations. The first category includes options such as the Smart Drive, SMOOV, Impulse R90, Klaxon Twist, and Light Drive, which come in the form of an extra motorized wheel attached to the back of the chair between the large rear wheels, which is operated by a one-handed control unit that consists of either buttons or dials. Rear-mounted power assists usually cannot steer for you, however. They may be best for blind users who are able to steer either by foot propelling, as I do, or by moving their hands between the cane plus control unit and the wheels. The second category are rear wheel replacements that have power built in and are activated either by pushing them manually or operating a control device like a joystick. With manually pushed powered wheels, they are steered the same way as regular rear wheels by using your hands on the push rims. With joystick operated wheels, the joystick allows you full directional control with one hand, essentially turning your manual chair into a power chair. Some available manually operated power wheels include the eMotion and Navi One wheels, and these may be well suited to those who are able to hold the cane and the push rim in one hand, as they cannot be operated one-handed. Some joystick-controlled options include the eFix and NaviGo wheels, which can be great for those who need one-handed control. And some powered wheels, like the Impulse M90, can do both joystick and manual push power. These options are great for blind users who want their power assist to also be able to handle the steering. The final category includes choices like the Firefly, Baytech, Klaxon Click, Tri-Ride, and Impulse F35, which consists of an extra motorized wheel mounted to the front of a wheelchair. Front-mounted power assists lift the front caster wheels off the ground, effectively turning your wheelchair into a tricycle. They typically have handlebars on top, which the user must use to steer. I will personally admit that I have largely excluded front-mounted power assists from my own pool of operations because they obstruct the use of a white cane. Based on my experience trying them, they can also be somewhat difficult to control with only one hand on the handlebars if the other is using a cane, though readers may want to do their own research. These are all of the options that I have thus far discovered for manual wheelchair users. For some, however, none of these options will be suitable, even if they would be able to push a manual chair in the traditional way if they did not need to use a white cane. And in these cases, it may indeed be necessary to move a power chair. I have found that I and other blind wheelchair users have been pushed unnecessarily toward a power chair simply on the basis of white cane use, without being given the chance to explore other options that may work perfectly well for us. But as I have hopefully driven home already in this guide, there will always be exceptions and edge cases for whom none of the other suggestions here will work. I believe in making sure your wheelchair meets your physical mobility needs before making changes based solely on the use of the white cane because, as we wheelchair users know, an ill-suited wheelchair can do more long-term damage to our bodies and our health. But there may be situations in which the second best option is preferable if the drawbacks are minor enough to make the ability to use the cane significantly more possible, which can sometimes mean using a power chair instead of a manual, because every case can be so radically different from the next. However, I highly recommend requesting from your wheelchair OT to be able to physically test out various options with your white cane before making a final decision. Some wheelchair seating clinics can offer temporary loaner chairs that share some of the features of the chair you are considering, and if not, you may want to consider visiting the nearest to you mobility aid showroom and spending several hours trying out options firsthand. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. You have been listening to the Braille Monitor, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. If you have an idea for a topic to explore, please contact Audio Journal at 508-797-1117 or email info@audiojournal.org. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. It's morning in the Okefenokee National Wildlife Refuge, land set aside to protect the fabled Okefenokee Swamp of Georgia and Florida. With so much water, it's not surprising that frog calls surround us. Tall cypress trees and Spanish moss give the swamp a prehistoric appearance. Suddenly, there's a flash of gold as a small bird hops onto a cypress knee. It's a prothonotary warbler, one of the most striking of the swamp's denizens. Having wintered in a mangrove swamp in the West Indies, this male returned to the Okefenokee and established a breeding territory. With loud song and brilliant colors, it attracted a mate, and now has raised a nest full of young. Prothonotaries have longer bills than most warblers, and they use them to probe into tree bark and clumps of curled leaves. Swamps are productive places, and the pair of warblers easily found enough small insects to feed their brood of four. Because they live down in the realm of trunks and branches rather than up in the leaves, the prothonotary has adopted a very unusual nesting habit for a warbler. It nests in natural crevices or old downy woodpecker holes. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Bird Note gives you the sounds of birds every day, and you get the sights as well when you follow us on Instagram at Bird Note Radio.
This is your Better Business Bureau with our tip of the week. When doing business these days, it is important to do your research. The BBB recommends typing a company name into your favorite search engine with words like complaint and scam. You can search for a phrase that describes your situation, like IRS call. You can even search for phone numbers to see if other people have reported them as scams. And when in doubt, check with BBB. Know who you're dealing with. If you've only ever met someone online or are unsure of the legitimacy of a business, take some time to check them out. Search the internet for others who may have had dealings with them. If a message comes from a friend and it seems unusual or out of character, contact your friend directly to check if it was really them who sent it to you. Remember to call BBB if you suspect a scam or want to report a scam, even if you don't lose money. Your scam report will help prevent additional victims. Our toll-free number is 1-866-566-9222.
Welcome to Everyday Poems for Every Day, sponsored by Audio Journal. Our poem today is actually a sonnet. It's Sonnet 98 by William Shakespeare. From you have I been absent in the spring, when proud, pied April, dressed in all his trim, hath put a spirit of youth in every